Start?
Yes.
I'm taking this.
Do you do a roll call or something here, Robin?
First, I think you need to give the date and the place.
I need to call a meeting to order?
Yes.
Okay, I'll call a meeting to order. The March 25th, well, this is not the open. March 25th, executive session of state personnel board is hereby called to order. Location meeting 1740 West Adams Street, Conference Room B, Phoenix, Arizona. The time is 10:43 a.m. Robin, would you call the roll?
Mark Ziska?
Here.
Chad Kirkpatrick?
Here.
Jason Dudek?
Here.
Harmony Duport is not present. And neither is Jeff Topple.
I'm on now.
Oh, you're on. Okay. Hey, Jeff.
I apologize. I just read my calendar. And I don't want to make excuses, but my wife's in the hospital, so I come in from there. And I looked, and I thought it was a blood. So I apologize.
Sorry about that, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how is everybody? And I'll be there in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Is your wife okay?
Yeah, she'll be okay. She's got
kidney
stones, I guess. Very painful, but otherwise.
Yes, very painful. So the next item on the agenda is my executive director update, and the one thing that I would like to report is the update on the bill that we have going through Congress, and I'm happy to announce that it is now sitting on the governor's desk. So I imagine that he received that on Monday, and I understand he has 5 days to sign it. If he doesn't sign it, it goes into law, but he would have to veto it in order for it to not pass through. So I think by tomorrow or Monday I should know for sure, and I will send out an email and let the board know. I certainly got a lot of calls from whether senators or representatives, even the governor's office called me, and the changes were very, very small, and I thought they were just self-explanatory, but once I heard their questions, I understood they really didn't know how our process works. Most of the boards actually have their own hearings in their board meetings, which we do not do. We always assign to a hearing officer, and the hearing officer conducts the hearings separately from our board meetings. They were under the impression that the board needed extra 30 days. And I explained, no, it's part of the hearing, and it's actually the parties that don't have enough time to put together their cases to get to hearings, so we always need a little more time, and it's always the hearings are always continued. So, I'm happy to hear that that's gonna work out for us this year, and then I would like to next year I'd like to put another bill through, and get back the authority that the board lost in 2012 when they did the reform. Just as a recap, the board used to be the final say-so. When the board decided that an employee either won or they lost, that was it. Now the decision goes to the director of the agency, and that director of the agency is the one that has the final say-so. I did have a discussion with our most senior hearing officer. He's been with our board, Harold Murkow. I'm sure you've seen his name before. He's been with our board since 1979, and we had a very good discussion about a month ago, and he said that he would absolutely help me out with getting this next bill through legislature next year. He said that it was when they decided to give this board their authority, back in 1978, they just removed that authority. Why you have a independent board like ours,
right,
and then do a statute that removes that authority, it's wrong. So
it essentially makes us a recommendation more than a decision maker.
Actually, that's true. So yeah. I mean, you know, he wondered what really is the purpose of this board,
yeah,
except for having a second pair of eyes. We have no authority. And it goes right back to the director who initially gave the discipline in the first place. And I've been doing some research. I haven't finished listening to what happened in, I think it was in 2011. There is an audio of the arguments that were before, I can't remember what committee that was. It's like a 3-hour video, and I've only gotten through half of it, but I did hear somebody stand up, and he was totally against the fact that they wanted to give the directors and they used this word, a second bite at the apple. And he said there is no due process in that. If you give this decision back to the director who initially gave the discipline, then there is no due process. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's always surprised, man. I would love if you get those recordings. So if you listen to some of those, I've always been interested in knowing what led to this, because you're right, it's pretty extraordinary, particularly because we once had that authority and then it was removed. So I've always asked that question, and of course it was before my time, my involvement with the board, but how did that come about and what was the rationale for changing that? Because absolutely, it changes things, and it's somewhat crazy. And the results that we've seen, I think, are also somewhat telling, because, you know, they don't often accept our decisions, and you know, then they're right back in the same place that they were in before the appeal to the board.
Right.
Here's a little history.
Oh, yeah.
When Governor Brewer wanted to reduce the number of covered employees.
Right.
There were no raises given for a couple of years. And then he offered a bonus. And as a condition of accepting the bonus, you had to give up your coverage under the law.
Right.
And then the director of corrections, I can't think of his name now, he was very angry because we overturned a number of his cases that were involved in a death, and he was inconsistent in applying his authority across a number of people. So basically what happened was he picked those people that he wanted to discipline for the death, and then the supervisors who were responsible for those people did not receive disciplinary action, so we felt it was inconsistent, and we put people back to work, and he was very angry with that.
Charles Ryan,
yeah.
So that led to the 2013 changes, or 2012?
Yeah, so it was political. It was to reduce the number of people covered, and it was Director Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, he's been replaced with somebody now that is now refusing to abide by our subpoenas, so.
Yeah, that's the truth. Which we'll touch on that in a second. So, Robin, have you had discussions? I mean, do you think there would be support for these changes?
So I had a meeting with a couple of representatives, and I thought they wanted to really talk to me about my bill. They set the meeting for 30 minutes, and I thought, well, this is going to take 5 minutes. I don't know why they set that meeting up.
Yeah.
Well, the meeting ended up being an hour, and basically they wanted to talk to me about the board, not about my bill. They wanted to know why we're not getting board members assigned. And I said, well, that's out of my hands. I do not do that job. And we've been trying to get one board position filled. This August will be 5 years. And they were like, oh my gosh. And I said, well, and then they asked me, do you think that the governor's trying to get rid of the personnel board? And I said, I have no idea. Or are they being incompetent? And I said, I don't know. It's just very frustrating that we're not getting board positions filled. And I'm not the only one. And she, one of the representatives, it was Kelly Butler, she said that she was a board member on ASRS and that she noticed that was happening with them too. And I said, well, absolutely, it's happening to all the boards. I'm not the only one. And then she asked quite other questions about the board in general, and I wondered. She was on a fishing expedition, actually, and I started to explain to her about the personnel reform, and when I told her that the board used to have the final authority and now they don't after the reform, she was quite taken back by that, and the other one joined in as well, and they said, I said, I'd like to get this changed next year, and they said, you have our support. So,
I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, that's something that would interest them.
I do think there's going to be pushback. I really do. But
I think elsewhere there will be pushback for sure.
Yeah. Especially from the governor.
Yeah.
Robin, the other thing that happened was they took away our authority to review 80-hour suspensions.
That's true.
Right.
So be sure to put that back in.
Absolutely.
As long as you're going in to change it back.
Right. Anything else?
Well, and my understanding, again, I wasn't there at the time, was that dramatically changed the number of cases that we have.
It did. Yes.
Are you
here to speak for
the
hall in
there? Yes. I'm asking this about the hall in the hallway. We're in the executive meeting right now. But we're going to be done maybe 10 minutes or less. Okay. Do you want to water? Could be.
I'm sorry.
So, and I'm outside now, but we'll probably make sense to finish this point. Yeah, no, I think if you can make progress, congratulations on getting the first piece of that done. I think, I mean, if there's momentum. I know where Kelly Butler is politically, and so, you know, who knows? I suspect there will be opposition on the other side.
Yes, but I've also been in contact with Senator Borelli's office, and that was explained to him, and he seems to be on our side as well. So I think I'm going to have to do it. They call it lobbying. I don't know. I just call it going talking to people, and I'm going to have to make a lot of meetings in this next year.
Yeah.
And or in this year, actually, because the basically we have to have our draft submitted sometime in November, December time frame. So yeah, this year I'm going to be making a lot of meetings with senators and representatives and trying to explain the situation, and hopefully we have some good support.
Yeah, that's great.
How about Latona?
So yes, and I'll send you the briefing. So Latona and Jason, this case has gone on for, there's been many different parts to it, many, multiple appeals of multiple employment decisions over the course of its time, predated me.
Okay.
Multiple trips up to the Court of Appeals and the Superior Court. So this is the most, for those who recall, this is the most recent appeal that Latona made. And in the context of that appeal, Latona's attorney subpoenaed the director of ADOC, Director Shin, who signed the termination letter for Latona and subpoenaed him for attendance at the hearing to testify regarding his role. The state, on behalf of Mr. Shin, the director, filed a motion to quash with the hearing officer, Officer Murkow, ironically, in this case, saying, you know, he is the head of the organization. He doesn't know what happened. He signed this letter, but he doesn't know what happened. So he's so high up in the organization, he can't take the time to come and talk about it, and he doesn't have any actual facts. He just signed the letter. And Officer Murkow denied that motion and said, no, he does have to appear, but if he can't appear then, we'll try to figure out a mutually acceptable time that can go very well. And the state attorney general's office then filed what's called a special action in the Superior Court. It's really an appeal, and appeals typically go to the Court of Appeals, but because we're an administrative board, the first level of appeal is to the Superior Court. And she filed a special action, which by its very name, as you can tell, is very, they're unique. There has to be a very extraordinary circumstance. And what she was asking for was the Court of Appeals to issue a mandate to Officer Murkow requiring him to quash, to essentially take out, get rid of, the subpoena to Shin for these reasons, being that he was the top guy in this government entity and he should never be subpoenaed, etc., and he doesn't have actual information. So it was a special action at the Superior Court. The Superior Court dismissed the special action, saying we don't have jurisdiction and it's not a big deal. The state, on behalf of Director Shin, then filed an appeal of the special action to the Court of Appeals. And on this appeal, interestingly, and this happens a lot, we're somewhat aligned with the employee in this case, Latona, and in past cases, even in the Latona legacy, we've not been aligned with them. But at this point, on these issues, we are. And our argument on appeal is, quite frankly, the state appealed the wrong issue. What the state should have appealed is the Superior Court's decision to say we don't have jurisdiction. The decision not to accept jurisdiction over the special action. And they sort of glossed over that issue and went straight to arguing the substance, why Officer Murkow's decision was wrong. Whereas the Superior Court didn't even address the substance because they said they didn't have jurisdiction. So our position on the appeal, again, consistent with Latona's, was, well, you know, they didn't really appeal the right issue. And the only issue that could possibly be before the Court of Appeals at this point is the issue of, whether the Superior Court properly declined jurisdiction. So it's at the Court of Appeals. I'll send the Robin brief. It's another one. You know, we don't have too much skin in this game because, you know, we don't. Again, Officer Murkow, I think he made the right decision. Said he's got to appear based on the circumstances here. He signed the letter. If we lose, it's not the worst thing in the world. But you know, it's an interesting decision. Area of the law, and the argument from the state is really somewhat unique, and there's not case law here in Arizona. They try to make two separate arguments that are similar. One being, there's this concept that, like, if you sue a Fortune 500 company you can't just automatically depose the CEO, because the CEO is what they call the apex, the highest person in the organization. Unless they had actual involvement, we don't want, you know, to force this person to be deposed because simply he's the, you know, the top of the organization. So that's part of the argument. And then there's a corollary argument, very similar, that he's the top of a government entity. But in those cases, he wasn't the individual who signed the letter. So I think, you know, if they get to the substance, I think those are distinguishable. But we don't even feel that they should get to the Court of Appeals should get to the substance of the appeal, because the only issue should be whether or not the Superior Court properly declined jurisdiction. And if the Court of Appeals said no, they should have accepted, then it will go back to the Superior Court to rule on the merits. Very legal, you know, argument. But it's hyper-technical. I'm shocked, as I am with everything in Latona, on both sides. And those, chancing some of it, but Mark's been through most of it. Obviously, Robin knows. This has been a saga in which the last one, Latona, appealed, and it was really, you know, we won on that appeal. And again, we, in that case, we were aligned with ADOC on that one, but now we're aligned with Latona. But this case is endless, right? I mean, the last time I think we thought, when we got through that Court of Appeals case and we wanted the Court of Appeals on the last Latona appeal at the Court of Appeals, we thought that was the end. And then a whole separate appeal of it, this is a whole, those were suspensions, is my recollection, and now he was actually terminated. This is a whole separate board appeal, but there's been all these different pieces.
Actually, Jeff, he was terminated in the first appeal. And
right.
I think that
was
whole process. Pardon?
Was he reinstated as part of the process? Is that, I remember
yes.
It was before I was involved.
Yes.
And was there another appeal before this one? Was there an appeal of the suspension as well?
I don't remember a suspension. I remember it went on for about 2 years, Latona,
yeah.
The first one. And now the second
right.
one, he was reinstated, and then they fired him again, and now this has gone on for about a year.
And so there hasn't even been an underlying...
The straw that broke the camel's back with Ryan, maybe.
Yeah.
But... Because, yeah, there were others. I think that we've had 4 different incidents with this gentleman.
Yeah, and it might have not been a suspension, but I thought at one point in time, maybe it was in the context of the first one. I know there were questions about whether or not he even should be. I mean, this thing has touched every aspect of, you know, of what we do. I mean, it's, again, Superior Court, Court of Appeals. I mean, it's gone everywhere. There's also an element, I think, of bad blood between some of the individuals involved that perhaps is continuing to keep this thing going. But, you know, at some point, so it's not been set for oral argument, and I don't know that it will be. In light of our jurisdictional argument, the Court of Appeals, we made this argument. Latona made a similar argument about the fact that it's not the issue before the Court of Appeals. It should simply be whether or not the Superior Court properly declined jurisdiction. And it's possible the Court of Appeals just rules on that without oral argument and says, you know, they did properly decline and then it's over. Or they say they should have accepted jurisdiction and they remanded back to the Superior Court to address the substance of these arguments. But it's extraordinary, and there hasn't been an underlying hearing in the case yet because it was all conditioned on this request for the subpoena.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, Robin, what's the status of the, is it just stayed pending all these issues? Is that what the decision was ultimately for the hearing?
For the hearing now, we're just waiting for this
okay.
to all Because I tried to set it before when the Superior Court rejected it. I tried to set it again.
Yeah, that was my recollection.
And Kirsten said, no, you can't set the hearing yet. So, we're just waiting to set the hearing until this is all finished.
I mean, I think we're all a bit surprised that this is continuing to escalate some of these issues. I mean, I really did not think, again, it's one thing to file a special action, which by its very name is unique and is only permitted in extraordinary circumstances. What they were asking the Superior Court to do was mandate. It's called a writ of mandamus. You know, when you learn about writ of mandamus, like your first year in law school, but you never think you're going to deal with it again. And most lawyers, 99% of lawyers, never deal with this concept of writ of mandamus because it's an extraordinary remedy. And that's what we're dealing with here. She had asked the Superior Court to literally compel and mandate the hearing officer to quash the subpoena, to take certain action. Courts don't like that because that's having the judiciary tell, you know, a member of another branch to do something, and it doesn't happen a lot, and for the, that's why it's not an easy thing to get, and it's never thought I'd be part of so many special actions, but we have quite a few.
We're keeping you busy there, Jeff.
And as I say to Robin, and Mark, since you both have been here, I'm just surprised that a lot of these issues never came up previously. But I think there's a number of factors as to why they are currently. But we can touch those at a different time. But I think these are pretty extraordinary issues that seem to come up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff. That was
a good recap. I'm going to come in.
Okay.
Okay. I'll see everybody in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Question, does anybody have any issues or concerns, questions on today's case?
I guess, Mark, and I don't think we can address this, but as I was, you know, reading through the investigation, and it was interesting, the officer Johnson, as I was reading it, stated she was basically out on a leave or a paid leave, and yet still acting in her, you know, capacity. And it looked, at least from the documents I saw, it wasn't covered very, very deeply, but she looked like she was on an FMLA or some type of medical leave. Does that normally happen with the state? I mean, there's usually a cut of, like, if you're on FMLA, you're not to be doing any work, yet her supervisor decided to send this email to her. She decided then to, I'll just say work, because technically responding to an email, giving direction to your team while on FMLA, that just doesn't, it's just not right. But I don't think that's, you know, that's not something that could really, we as the board can examine or talk to, correct?
We can ask the question. So, okay. For instance, Kirsten will not be appearing, is that correct, Robin?
Correct,
she said, yeah.
So Daniel Strzok, I guess.
He's out in the hall.
Okay.
Is the attorney. So it's a good question to ask. He probably won't know the answer.
But he is here and he's out in the hallway. I just wanted to let the board know in case anybody else didn't understand. But Kirsten was on the case. She's an AG, assistant AG. She's the one that actually represents the Department of Corrections, and so we see her on every case. But in this situation, because of what's going on with Latona, and she's representing the department, and she's representing a witness, which is Shin. He's the one refusing to follow our subpoena. I guess somebody in the AG's office decided that was a conflict of interest, so she was removed from the case, and now we have a an outside counsel who's coming in to speak with us today in place of Kirsten. I've never met him before.
He's out there.
He is waiting out there, but yeah. And then also, I received a call about half an hour before I came into the conference room from the other party, from Holland's attorney, and he says he will not be here today. He agrees that they lost the case, and that he did not want to even waste his time. So we are going to only listen to the state's representative today.
So, Jeff?
Yes, hello.
This is a question. If the appellate doesn't even show up, can we tell the respondent that there is no appeal and move on?
We still have to vote.
I think we still have to hear the, I mean, give him the opportunity to talk, although I don't, you know.
I mean, I can tell him
but
that
I think
the
we
other
still
party
have to,
is not here. But
yeah.
And in that case, in the past, we've always, you know, like, I remember Donna saying, well, you know, as long as the other party's not here, I'm just going to say, you know, follow the hearing office recommendation and that's it. She didn't even go through her spiel. She just said, you know, the hearing officer was correct, and I hope that you vote that way.
From the looks of it, I don't know that he knows that they're not going to be here because he looked like he was studying something, but
yeah, he might not. But
so,
he didn't file an objection, so that was the first clue to me that he knew he lost.
And how often have they done it? Because
they always file an objection.
Yeah, I was going to say I've not been in one where they had not filed an objection, but I guess if there ever was one, this would be the case from the looks of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jeff?
Yeah.
Can we tell him that there is nobody here? Can I tell him there's nobody here representing the appellate and that we'll listen to any points that he would like to make?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you should be aware of that?
Yeah.
That just speeds things up.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
So do you want to adjourn this meeting?
Yep. Unless there's something else that I don't know about, but yes.
Okay.
Meeting is adjourned.